Welcome to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, coming to you from our fabulous studios high atop Concord's main street at the moment, where you know Concord's making it because there are street buskers in front of the lunch places. All we need is food trucks, and then Concord is on the map. I'm joined by Chris Ryan, and we are brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. And we're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For a free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? Well, speaking of sunshine or lack thereof, it looks like the hurricane season is in full swing. Just days after Hurricane Harvey battered Texas and Louisiana, Irma has torn a path through the Caribbean, leaving destruction in its wake. It's aimed squarely at Florida and then the southeast, and it's being followed close behind by two other systems forming in the Atlantic. So there are three hurricanes on track right now. And out on the west coast, it's 106 degrees out in San Francisco and other places on the west coast. Mexico just had an 8.1 earthquake. So things are shaken up all over. It's a great time to be a meteorologist. I guess I'd put it to you that way, but it's a tough time for natural disasters. Not that climate change is real or has anything to do with the extreme weather that we are seeing. Meanwhile, our Carrot Top Cantaloupe, who's leading the nation, decided that DACA, the program that President Obama had signed by executive order into place, which allowed approximately 800,000 young people who had come here mostly as babies brought by their parents, come here illegally, but brought by their parents and have now grown up and are working, are buying homes, are contributing to society. He's decided that that program should be stopped, and he said that it's delayed for 6 months, but the federal immigration officials are already cutting off any new applications in that program. And who knows if Congress will be able to act in 6 months. They haven't been able to act on anything in years. So giving them 6 months to fix the immigration problem is really a pretty evil way of pushing off a decision that the president said or indicated that he had a big heart. He said that he had a big heart and something good would happen. When the decision was announced, he didn't even left it to Jeff Sessions to announce it, claiming it was unconstitutional. But of course, President Trump said, well, if Congress doesn't act, then he would act, because he doesn't really care if it's constitutional or not. It's all about politics. But then, to cap off an amazing couple of days, President Trump then goes and makes a deal with the Democrats on the debt ceiling. He says, we'll do Hurricane Harvey relief. We'll extend the debt ceiling for 3 months so that we can fund the relief and fund the government till December 8th. And he's seen making whoopee with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. And I got to tell you, people, the pictures that we saw coming out after that meeting with smiling Democrats and really unhappy GOP leaders says a lot about a president who really doesn't have any politics. If people thought he was a Republican, they're frankly wrong, because he's not really a Republican. He's not really a Democrat. He belongs to the Cantaloupe Party. And he probably is one of only, he's not just a few people, but he's kind of his own guy, because ultimately what matters is how he looks. I wonder, Chris Ryan, why it was that he made a deal with the Democrats on Harvey and debt relief. What did he have to gain? What did he have to lose? And why would he do such a thing?
I have no idea.
Speechless Chris Ryan, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it here on the radio at WKXL AM and FM. Chris Ryan is speechless. He's without an answer for a political question. This is a first.
So this is the, you know, kind of a glimpse into the president that Donald Trump could have been and the candidate that he could have been. Wayne Lesperance from NEC joined me on New Hampshire Now on Friday, and he talked about one of Donald Trump's first appearances in New Hampshire. It was at New England College, and the students were just euphoric. They were thrilled. They were lined up. They were well dressed. Everybody wanted a picture, and this was before the campaign started to emerge, and there was some of the divisive rhetoric and so forth that Trump had spoken. And Donald Trump had an opportunity to be, any type of candidate that he wanted to be. And he chose, to play to the lowest common denominator. Why he chose to go there, who knows? But the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump has been, masquerading as a alt-right Republican for a year now, through the course of the campaign. And I don't know if he thought it was a political strategy he was going to play to the base, if he was just comfortable, whatever the case may be. But when it comes down to it, Donald Trump has a lot in common with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Donald Trump is a very wealthy elitist, and he is a individual who is from New York City. So is Chuck Schumer. Nancy Pelosi's from the other coast. He has a lot more in common with Chuck and Nancy, as he called them, than he does with Mitch and Paul. And I think that I don't know if this is a, we can't really predict what Donald Trump's going to do from, one day to the next or one decision to the next. If this is a play towards, moving to the center, if he's realized that, hey, if I'm going to be a two-term president, probably it's a good idea for me to start adapting and adopting positions that are popular with the the majority of America. But then, a couple days before, he's doing DACA, which is an 80-20 issue. 80% wants DACA kids and older and now adults to stay, and 20% want them to leave. And he was completely there was a lot of ambiguities what exactly he wanted to do on that either. And then Nancy Pelosi talked to him on the phone. He called Nancy the day after that, and Nancy said, "Well, I'd like you to word a tweet so that the people who are currently protected by DACA aren't scared moving forward." He's like, "I'll do it." And he just sent something out. And, imagine being like Sean Spicer or Reince Priebus, who spent months trying to have some sort of influence over what he tweeted and how he tweeted. And all they needed to do was to call Nancy Pelosi, and Nancy Pelosi would have told. So, and that just, him working with Pelosi and Schumer, that just infuriates his supporters and infuriates his base.
Not to mention the
Paul
Republicans,
Ryan and Republicans,
the Republican leadership.
So, I think that's the conclusion that can be drawn here is that the president is not all that centered.
He's not ideological.
I don't think the problem is when you try to apply logic to his actions. You are applying logic to somebody who is illogical, and you are creating you're going to just drive yourself crazy.
In other words, there's no way to know what he's thinking. There's no way to know what he's going to do or why he's going to do it. And by the way, whatever he says on day one is of no moment.
Right.
On day two, because
day one is gone.
Could be later that afternoon.
In DACA, he had four different positions, as I counted them, on DACA in that one day, and including the Sessions one.
Well, it makes it very hard for Americans, let alone the rest of the world, to feel a sense of stability and security in the leadership of the United States. And this is irrespective of whether I agree with the policy or disagree with the policy. I mean, the Democrats are crowing because by pushing off the debt ceiling debate, so to speak, till just before Christmas, they're going to make it pretty hard for the Republicans to say no to raising the debt ceiling, to doing the borrowing, to keeping things going at a time when Americans are going to be looking for a continuation of the government. It's going to make it very hard strategically for the Republicans to put up the kind of ideological battle that they have in the past over the debt ceiling.
In other words, Donald Trump's not going to shut down the government at Christmas.
That's right. But let me just say that overall, the issue of the debt ceiling and borrowing.
I shouldn't say that. He'll be in big trouble if he puts
the debt ceiling. The debt ceiling always gets raised in the end. But I will say this: that there really does need to be a debate in this country about how much borrowing, how much debt we're carrying,
how much.
Because I mean, you can call me a progressive, you can call me a conservative, you can call me a centrist, you can call me whatever you want. But one of the major unaddressed issues in this country is our national debt. Under President Obama, of course, debt got deeper because there had to be investments in saving the economy, those investments cost a lot. But over the course of his presidency, the president brought down the annual deficit significantly. They were in the trillions, but he brought them down to something still not acceptable, beyond half a trillion dollars.
Right.
So the nation as a whole is deeply, deeply in debt, and interest on that debt is costing us about 20% of the federal government. So,
and how much do you think it's going to cost to clean up these hurricanes?
By the time we're through with the hurricanes, $100 billion, $200 billion here, $200 billion there, and that's just for the hurricanes that we know about. There are two more still forming, so that we've got utter devastation coming in Florida and the southeast of the country, in addition to the devastation throughout the Caribbean, Bahamian, Puerto Rico, and everywhere else. There's going to be a huge price tag for national disasters. So in addition to a real discussion about national debt and deficits, which frankly Democrats just never want to have, but my position is you've got to be fiscally responsible in order to be progressive, because in order to pay for the programs that you want, you're going to have a government that's working right. And why should we be wasting 20% annually of the federal budget on interest when it ought to go elsewhere? But in addition to that argument, this is like a clue alert, okay? For those who are clueless about climate change, take a look at the weather. 106 degrees in San Francisco is unusual. How about that for a nice, restrained word? It's unusual. Three hurricanes in a row, including a generational storm in Irma. Something is going on with the weather pattern, folks, and it's time to look at climate change. And meanwhile, just to wrap up this segment, here in New Hampshire, the Voter Fraud Commission is showing up for a so-called hearing, a field hearing at St. Anselm's on September 12th. Progressive groups are gearing up for protests outside. The Kent Street Coalition and New Hampshire Votes are organizing protests for that coalition. And the leader of the so-called Voter Fraud Commission, Secretary of State of Kansas, Kent Kaulbach, has now said that there's indisputable evidence of voter fraud in New Hampshire, citing statistics that have nothing to do with voter fraud. He's been taken to task by Democrats, by independent consultants. Folks, there is not massive voter fraud in New Hampshire. It's simply the carrot top cantaloupe trying to come up with some reason why he lost the popular vote here in New Hampshire and by 3 million votes to Hillary Clinton. This is a nut job of a commission that should be disbanded. It has no real work to do. And the statistics that are being floated and probably picked up by alt-right, right-wing, crazy nut job radio are just have no bearing on the issue of voter fraud.
Well, the union leader ran with this, and not just the out-of-state IDs issue, but individuals who are being investigated, and also individuals who may have voted twice, and they conveniently attached a number that was larger than the margin that Maggie Hassan defeated Kelly Ayotte by.
Oh, what a surprise.
And that to me is reckless. It's irresponsible.
We're talking about the union leader.
Secretary Gardner's placating this commission. Other secretaries of state in Republican states like Mississippi and Arizona told them where to go with their commission. And Bill Gardner should have done the same.
He's
being used, and the state is going to end up looking bad, already is, as a result of this. And there's also a loser's mentality that exists, in my view, amongst Republicans who will see a number that of over 1,000 that voted illegally and assume that every single one of those individuals voted for the opponent. There is no greater test to blind partisanship than if you see a number like that, or you see individuals voting illegally, and you automatically assume that every single one of those individuals is a part of the opposition.
This is Off the Record with Paul Hodes. I'm speaking with Chris Ryan. For once in his life, was speechless, trying to figure out why Donald Trump did what he did this week. More speechless stuff to come. Don't go away. Off the Record on WKXL AM and FM, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community for those dealing with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. Go to revisionenergy.com for a free consultation. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with some interesting interviews with Mary Keeganmeister about education in New Hampshire. Welcome back to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, coming to you today from our fabulous studios deep beneath the earth on Reddington Road in Concord, New Hampshire. We are brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. And Off the Record is powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of New Hampshire businesses and families looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For a free consultation, go to revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? And we are joined in this segment by my good friend Mary Keeganmeister. Mary is the executive director of the Story Preservation Initiative, a remarkable organization doing pioneering work in New Hampshire schools with experiential project-based learning. Mary, welcome to Off the Record.
Thank you, Paul. I'm happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about SPI, Story Preservation Initiative. What is it and how did it get started?
Got started 7 years ago, 2010. We're a nonprofit. We're New Hampshire-based. What we do, briefly, is we produce original source, primary source audio recordings of people of high achievement in the arts, sciences, and humanities. These people tell their stories about the work that they do, their life as a child, their influences, the evolution of their work, their successes, their failures, and we record that professionally. We then take those recordings and we develop project-based lesson plans around them, and we go into schools primarily, or at this point exclusively in the state of New Hampshire, and we use the primary source material to these stories to engage students, and then the project-based lesson plans that we develop to deepen the learning. So it's been an interesting and very gratifying work.
How did you get started doing this?
From the time I was quite young. I will go back to my 20s. I have always had a somewhat odd, I suppose, interest in people's life stories, to a point where I would hear about someone or read about someone, and I would call them up on the phone, or I would write them a letter. This was before the internet. And I would ask them, can I meet you? I read about you. Can I meet you? Can I interview you? I just want to know more about what you do. And I did this with everyone from Shaker basket makers to dowsers to World War II vets to people re-nesting sea turtles. It was very broad. So that is really who I am. I've done that pretty much my whole life. It was not my livelihood. Kind of brought my kids traipsing along with me on these odd adventures. But I met some really interesting people, and I'm happy in looking back that I did that. But 7 years ago, I decided to life is short, and you might as well go for what you love. And I did. And I decided to try to make a go of it as a business. So I went to the Secretary of State, and I filed, and I did all the things I needed to do, and I bought some recording equipment. Initially, what I did when I was younger was I wrote. I didn't record. This time around, I bought audio equipment, and I said to myself, okay, now you need to find someone to record. So happily for me, in many respects, Donald Hall lives right down the road from me.
Donald Hall, the poet,
who is just a lovely, welcoming man. And I wrote him a letter, and I got a letter back, and he said, come on over. So I kind of gathered up all my courage, and I knocked on Donald Hall's door and went in, sat in his living room. There's a chair that Donald always sits in, and he's written about it, and I was sitting right across from him, and we talked. And he was wonderful. So Donald Hall was my first interviewee, and it went well, and it was fun. And Don said, you know, you really have to record Maxine Cumin. So I wrote to Maxine, and I said, Donald Hall said I really should record you. And she said, well, come on over. So it just went from there. I started with poets, branched out, very broad collection of audio at this point.
How many stories have you collected?
In the neighborhood of 60. I don't have the exact number, but it's growing all the time. We just recently did one of a fellow who is the last of the direct line descendants of Governor William Bradford of the Plymouth Colony. So we really talked about his great, 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 great ancestor. He's very knowledgeable about it, and it was a really interesting story. So that's kind of lost track of your question.
Well, I was asking about the beginnings of all of this. So you started with poets and have branched out into history and arts and science, environmentalists and astronauts and musicians and all kinds of folks. Now, are these stories collected somewhere?
They are.
Where?
Indeed. Well, we archive them in libraries, including the Library of Congress. We have a number of Holocaust survivors' stories. Those are both in the Library of Congress and the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. Other stories are at the New Hampshire State Library. Some are in, dependent upon the background of the person that I have recorded, they may want their story archived at a college where they were once associated. So they're at the Beinecke Library at Yale. They're at the UNH Special Collections. They're kind of all over the place.
Are they online?
Some are. The Holocaust certainly is. Library of Congress will be, but the queue there is very long.
What about on an SPI website?
Ah, yes. We do have a website. It is www.storypreservation.org. And that website really serves as a portal to both our blog and a project that we have developed. It's pretty much our flagship project called the Story Preservation Initiative Learning Lab. But if you go to our website and you click on blog, you'll go right in. And all of those audio recordings are there to
free
to be listened to. They are not transcribed. They're transcribed in the learning lab, but that's another story.
You mean transcribed into written form?
Yes. In the learning lab, you can both listen and read.
So if people go to the website, storypreservation.org, and go to the blog section, you can go in and listen to this incredible library of 60 life stories of really extraordinary people.
Correct.
And when you do the interviews and you prepare them, do we hear your questions and the stories of the people and their answers? Is it a question and answer story, or how is it set up?
I try very hard to cut myself out. A lot of, obviously, prep is involved. I have talking points. I do ask questions. And I do ask my interviewees to please answer me in full with a full answer so that it's not necessary to hear my question. And I do this for a number of reasons. Number one, I'm not too keen on listening to myself. And number two,
Very modest.
Oh, thank you. It is more interesting to really just have them telling their story. So where possible, there are some exceptions to that. In some cases, people do not answer in fully. And so there's no context to what they're saying. So I have to insert myself in there. But that's just a few recordings.
So I understand that from a technical standpoint, you collaborate with Jerry Putnam at Cedar House Sound and Mastering, who is a well-known area musician and engineer and runs an extraordinary recording studio. So that has been a really great collaboration for SPI. I mean, Jerry is just he's quite brilliant in terms of creating a very high level of professionalism for the recordings, and that's important. But talk a little bit about the power of audio, the recorded audio recordings as opposed to video, because we live in a very visually oriented culture these days. I mean, everybody seems to be glued to their screens all the time. We are all familiar with documentary film where we see people and hear them. It strikes me that the audio recordings have a different kind of effect and a different kind of power. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I'm partial to audio. And one of the reasons why is
that's why we're on the radio, by the way.
Exactly. Yes. I would not be on TV right now.
Right. I mean, I look much better on radio, by the way. I really, I look great on radio.
Well, if you think of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, a ventriloquist on the radio, and you bought into it, you could picture what was going on, that kind of says everything to me about audio. You actively participate in what you are hearing. You conjure up your own images. It's a more active participation. You are not spoon-fed scenery and what people look like and all of that. It's like reading a book in a way. You make your own pictures for the story.
So that's very interesting. It's just the way our brains work. It allows, when you're listening to something that's audio only, your brain starts filling in the details and maybe wandering and maybe coming back and maybe creating pictures. But it becomes, in a way, a very personal experience in that way. I guess it's one of the reasons why radio and podcasts are still so popular, because it just is different. I mean, not to mention the fact that if you're driving in your car, you really don't want to be looking at a documentary or moving pictures, but somehow you're able to listen to the radio and still focus on the job at hand. It's almost as if a different area of the brain is being engaged.
Well, I don't know the science behind that, but I would agree with that. And I do believe a different area of the brain is engaged. Yeah. And so, yes, you can listen, you can do other things, but you're still absorbing what is being said. And again, for the Learning Lab project that we do, where we go into schools, students listen to these stories. And students sometimes are listening and doing other tasks, but they're still absorbing that story.
We're talking with Mary Keegan-Meister, who's the executive director of Story Preservation Initiative. The website is storypreservation.org, where you can find upwards of 60 recorded life stories of notables in the arts, sciences, and humanities. This is Off the Record with Paul Hodes, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour, celebrate life at the Birches, call 224-9111, and we are proud to be powered by Revision Energy. That's Revision Energy. For a free consultation, to find out what sunshine can do for you, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be back with more Off the Record with Paul Hodes. Don't go away. We're back. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com. You can find past shows and binge listen to Off the Record with Paul Hodes, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. And Off the Record is proud to be powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For a free consultation, you heard me, a free consultation, go to revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com, and find out what sunshine can do for you. We're here with Sunshine, Mary Keegan-Meister, the executive director of Story Preservation Initiative, a remarkable organization which collects, archives the life stories of notables in the arts, sciences, and humanities, and then transforms those life stories into project-based experiential learning for the students, currently students in New Hampshire schools. We talked a little bit with Mary about the beginnings of SPI. Mary, how did the Learning Lab aspect develop?
Well, every time I would go to make a recording, I have to say I would go into wherever I was that I was recording one person. I would go in as Mary, and I would make the recording, listen to the, you know, interview the person, get to know them, get to know about their life, get to know about their work. And when I packed up my gear and I would walk out the door, I left that room a different person. My thinking was a little bit different. My perception was a little bit different. I had more knowledge than when I walked in. And it was really beginning to bug me that I needed to find a way to get these listened to by kids, by students, because there was a lot of learning taking place. And while the blog is there for everyone to listen to, it seemed to me that the real audience, for me, the real audience that matters our kids, and I call them kids, but it's a broad age range. I think primarily from the fourth grade through the 12th grade is the ages that we can go after. Sometimes it's a little harder on the early end for them to listen to all of the recordings. So sometimes we just play tracks for them, but that's how it happened. I made a connection at the Department of Education, and it was originally suggested that I upload everything onto the Department of Ed website and create a web presence there. Opted to not do that, opted to create our own website, Story Preservation, you know, Learning Lab website, and begin the process of getting into schools with the help of the DOE, with the help of the, you know, National Education Association, the New Hampshire chapter, with the help of the Association of School Principals, with just reaching out to schools, making connections, and saying, we have this collection and we are going to be developing project-based lesson plans around these recordings. Every story has a number of jumping off points for learning. So
this happened with the previous Commissioner of Education, Virginia Barry.
Yes.
And so with the cooperation of New Hampshire's Department of Education, you went to work with a few schools in New Hampshire with pilot projects, essentially, to see how this would work. And how does it work between SPI and the teachers, or SPI and the principals? How does that relationship work so that eventually the teacher is using the material with the kids?
When we started early on with that initial pilot, we were in four different schools in different regions in the state. And I met with the teachers individually and said, okay, you are a 10th grade English teacher in thus and such a town. You know, how can we make this collection work? What can we do? So together we brainstormed, and together with that particular example, decided to use the story of the poet Wesley McNair. Wesley McNair, his audio recording is very autobiographical. It's very compelling. And he talks about growing up in New Hampshire, so it's place-based, and about the difficulties he encountered as a child and a young man, and about how he turned to poetry and how his poetry evolved, why he became a poet. And so it's a gripping story. And we decided to use that story to jointly develop a project. I came up with some project ideas for this teacher, and she took those ideas and she ran with them and developed what became a very successful student-led, really multidisciplinary at the end of the day, project. So we wrote that project up. It's written in a standard lesson plan format, and we've uploaded it to our Learning Lab site. And likewise, that was the process with all the teachers initially.
So it sounds like the teachers, the educators, were a very significant part of developing the way in which the material would be used with their students, which must have given them tremendous ownership of the projects and allowed them as teachers to use their own creative influences, their own creative brains to develop curricula for their kids, so that, you know, in an era when we used to hear so much about No Child Left Behind, where teachers were teaching a narrow curricula, teaching to a test, and it sounded like everybody was frustrated, at least when I was running for Congress and in Congress. That's what I was hearing from educators about how frustrating it was just to teach to a test with, you know, without any room for creativity for the teachers. This must have been a wonderful gift to teachers, you know, because the teachers I've met, I'm happy to say in New Hampshire, the teachers I've met are just dedicated professionals who love kids, love learning, and this must have been a real gift.
It was a gift after a while. Initially, it was not what they were used to, and it was kind of scary.
Uh-huh.
And the word trepidation has come up a lot with various teachers.
Change is always a challenge.
Exactly. And they didn't quite know how this was going to work or what they were going to do. But the bottom line is, as this project developed, as they began to trust in the process and not entirely control the process. That's an interesting part of it. The kids began to take it in directions that they hadn't anticipated, so they adapted a bit. And it really became a very creative exercise, as you say, for the teacher and for the students. And at the end of the day, what happened you know, which has to happen in a classroom, is what they learned. English literacy, there were, in the case of the Wesley McNair project that was developed, there were some technical skills that were developed. There's a lot of social emotional learning that went on in that classroom. But as this unfolded, the teacher was then able to look at standards and competencies that were being addressed within that classroom, within that project, and assign them to that project, if that makes any sense. So at the end of the day, when it was all mapped out and this lesson plan was written, it's written in terms of, you know, activities and procedure and alignment and standards that are met. So another teacher anywhere could take what was done and replicate it or adapt it or make it their own, but okay, look at what was done. So there's a lot of different ways that teachers can use the material.
So what's interesting is that it sounds like it, in a way, as a reaction or response to the narrow curricula that we saw during the No Child Left Behind, and through the various changes in curricula, and there have been all kinds of issues raised about, is it federally driven? Is it state driven? Should it be federally driven? Should it be state driven? What about the Common Core? Who's against it? Who's for it? Local control, not local control. Project-based experiential learning sounds like a way for students to take ownership. We've been talking with Mary Keegan-Meister, who is the executive director of Story Preservation Initiative, which has produced a tremendous project-based experiential learning experience for students through SPI's Learning Lab. The website is storypreservation.org for anybody who's interested. You can also contact Mary through that website. Go talk to your teachers and tell them to check it out. Mary, thanks for joining us on Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111, and we are powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? Folks, this is Off the Record with Paul Hodes. We'll be right back to wrap up after this brief interlude. Don't go away. Welcome back. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community for those dealing with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Celebrate life at the Birches. Join a tour. Call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? Well, in this show, we saw that sunshine's in short supply down there in Florida. Bad weather's coming. Bad weather on the West Coast. Things are really hairy in our climate. Climate change must be doing something, but nobody's really talking about it now. We've got to deal with the fallout from successive hurricanes battering the southern part of our country. Huge amounts of money to be spent. President Trump made a deal with Democrats. The Republicans are upset. The Voter Fraud Commission is coming. But things are interesting on the education front in New Hampshire, because Story Preservation Initiative is bringing project-based learning to New Hampshire schools. So, folks, we live in a great place. Be involved. Thank you to our sponsors. Thanks to our listeners. We'll be back next week with more Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM.